From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Bloch.
And I'm Robert Siegel. What have new digital media meant for marketing music, books, videos? Well, Chris Anderson, the editor-in-chief of Wired magazine, figures that they have lengthened the tail of the retail sales curve. Think of the very best-selling items. Right now, this is topping the charts at iTunes and Billboard magazine. It's called Promiscuous by Nelly Furtado, featuring Timbaland. We've been conditioned to think of top 10 hits like that one, best-selling books, blockbuster movies, dominating sales, the big items at the top of the sales chart. But Chris Anderson tells us, look down at the bottom of the chart, too. That's where the graph is like a long tail. You might find, at about number 140,000 on Amazon's music rankings, a collection of Luciano Berio's Secuencias for Solo Instruments, or Female Voice. Now, this is a guaranteed non-bestseller. But Chris Anderson tells us that all of those low-selling items way down on the sales charts, when you add them all up, now represent a huge chunk of sales. He wrote about this in an article in Wired and now in a book called The Long Tail, Why the Future of Business is Selling Less of More. Chris Anderson, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
You're saying that the big successful purveyors of music, videos, books are doing it as much with many small niche audiences as with a big broad audience. Why?
Well, simply because it's now cheaper to do so. The reason we've focused on blockbusters and hits is not because we as a culture only want blockbusters and hits, but because that's what the distribution channels want. If you have limited shelf space, you only put the things on that make the best use of that. If you have limited channels or screens and a megaplex, you pick the things that will aggregate the largest possible audiences that reflect the lowest common denominator in some sense. Now you have the rise of markets that have infinite shelf space, iTunes, Amazon, Netflix. In many cases, a product is just an entry in a database, and there's no cost in putting them out there. And you can suddenly see just how much variety there has been all along, just suppressed by the old ways of buying things.
Just like you to relate the conversation you had, the trick question that was put to you that you got so wildly wrong that sent you off on this entire pursuit of the idea called the long tail.
One of my jobs as the editor of Wired is to talk about technology trends. And so I was talking to companies in digital media space saying, what's different about digital media? One of the companies I was talking to was called Ecast, and they make a digital jukebox, which is like a regular jukebox, you know, with neon and big speakers. But rather than having maybe 100 CDs in there, they had a hard drive and a broadband connection, and they had 10,000 or 20,000 or 30,000 tracks. And the CEO asked me this question. What percentage of our top 10,000 tracks do you think sell at least once per month? And because, you know, I know the 80-20 rule, I'd assume, well, it's probably 20%, you know, 20% of everything.
The 80-20 rule being that 20% of your best products usually account for 80% of your sales, whatever your business is.
Exactly, exactly. And this is the sense that a tiny minority of products are what you should focus on. You can pretty much neglect the rest. So the 80-20 rule suggests that the answer is probably about 20%. But I thought maybe digital is different, so maybe, I guess, 50%, really push it out there. And the answer is I was wildly wrong. The answer is 98%. And as they went to 20,000 and 30,000 and 40,000 tracks, it remained 98%. Virtually everything they put out there had some demand. And I thought, well, is this unique to digital jukeboxes or is it more common? And so I would talk to Netflix and Amazon and the music services, and they too were telling me 98%. The more they threw out there, the more demand they found. There seemed to be demand for almost everything. Now, they may not have sold more than once, but to recognize there's somebody out there for everything and that we can now have an efficient way to tap all this, all these onesies and twosies and add them up together into a big market was the really eye-opening insight that came when you actually looked at the numbers behind digital media.
So if the holy grail for, say, a TV producer used to be to create the show that all America will talk about at the water cooler in the morning, forget about it. This is not going to happen anymore.
Well, that's still the Holy Grail, and there still will be hits. But you're increasingly seeing an audience shifting away from broadcast television and going to things like YouTube, where they're watching skateboarding videos and Chinese teenagers lip-syncing.
But a video of Chinese teenagers lip-syncing, let's say, is just not as polished a product as Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. There's some advantage here to the big producer, no, who needs a big audience to pay off his big investment.
Absolutely. And one of the things you hear often from Hollywood and from the television industry is, you know, a kid with a camcorder can't do what we do. And that's absolutely true. What we're just discovering, however, is that there's demand for things that don't have high production values. There's this authenticity, the notion that this is actually real, actually has popularity, and that lack of polish becomes an asset. So when you look at the YouTube hits, many of them are more popular than all but the top 10 television shows. They're reaching audiences in the millions, and yet they're made by someone for essentially no money and uploaded for free.
I understand how. If you were one of the 10 groups selling each 100,000 items, you're doing fine. I don't understand if you're one of the million groups, each of whom has sold one item, how you are staying in the performance business and paying for health insurance.
Excellent question, and the distinction is you're not necessarily in the business. Why do people make music? Well, I used to be in bands when I was in my 20s, and I made music because it was really fun. Most artists don't quit their day job. The fact is that a lot of people will create things for reasons other than money. And if we only define success by commercial success, we miss the phenomena that created YouTube and created MySpace. And this is the fact that amateurs want to make things for their own reasons that have to do with reputation and expression and fun and just being appreciated, and that is enough.
You describe a phenomenon that we see very, very clearly in the internet and online sales, but you would say that we're seeing it elsewhere too, that the rise of the microbrewery would be an example of the emergence of a zillion different kinds of beer in the country, each reaching a small audience rather than just a couple of big name brands.
Once I put out the idea of the long tail, people found resonances in all sorts of industries I'd never thought of. And one of the proudest moments of my last month was when I saw that Anheuser-Busch has started a division called Long Tail Libations. What's the long tail of beer? It's microbrews. Well, it turns out that you know, supply chain innovations and stock-keeping technology have allowed us to put more products on the shelf. In supermarkets, we've basically doubled the number of products in a supermarket over the last 12 to 14 years. And now on a shelf where you might have just four beers, you can now have 40 or maybe even 400 kinds of beer. And there's demand for beer that isn't one size fits all. And microbrews are one example. Regional beers are another. There's the notion of craft beer. And, you know, it's suddenly economic to look at the broad variety of demand out there and offer something that isn't for everybody but really might be for some people and tap that long tail of niches.
Well, Chris Anderson, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you. It was fun.
Chris Anderson is the author of The Long Tail: Why the Future of Business is Selling Less of More.